This is H Avenger. You're listening to Horus the Avengers. Follow the White Rabbit, exclusive to WhiteRabbitRadio.net. And this is the Sign of the Times Roundtable we have on Truck Roy and Richard Cipher. And we've had an interesting event down in Alabama. The people that don't believe there's white genocide threaten to murder a billboard company for putting up a sign saying white genocide. It's kind of ironic. And out of fear for the man's life, they took down the sign. And the sign read, "Diversity means chasing down the last white person, hashtag white genocide." And they used Bob's press line, or Bob Whitaker's press line, which anyone can do, actually, and since he wrote it. And we have on Truck Roy and a new guest, Richard Cipher, who is from the South, to comment on all the shenanigans with these signs and with this message going gangbusters. Any of you guys on Twitter, this stuff is hilarious. At first, people thought the sign was a fake, and then there was pictures up, and then they found out it was real, and then you've got some famous bloggers like Hurtis commenting on it and all kinds of stuff. What do you guys think about this?
Well, I thought it was hilarious, Tim. I had a friend of mine who follows all the blogs and everything. And he was telling me that a lot of these articles, even one of them that came out of an official news affiliate television station, were convinced that this was put up by black people who were advocating white genocide. I'm dead serious. And they ended up pulling that one. But there was about 40% of the comments on some of these sites were white people that were angry that blacks would be this bold.
Yes, I noticed the same thing myself, and that put the anti-whites in the awkward position, who did understand the message, of explaining the message to these quote-unquote pro-rights that didn't quite get it, and then have to then destroy the message after they've explained it.
This is the genius of Bob Whitaker is jumping around the dog whistle. Typically, one of the challenges I've always found with conventional pro-white stuff is if you say love your race, they yawn and say racism. You say white pride or something, they yawn and say Nazi. It basically, you can't get into the cerebral cortex to get around that dog whistle, that gag reflex. And most of them don't even know what they're saying. They just repeat words like racist, Nazi, Klansman, that type of thing. Bob's particular genius is writing this stuff that jumps through the cerebral cortex and causes such a reaction against with everyone that first hears this stuff. And that's kind of the magic of it, as far as we're coming at things from an underdog type level. We don't have the media. We don't have Fox News per se. We do have some power online, obviously. And we do have some clever rabbits out there that can get a publicity stunt going. But that's what I thought was hilarious, is it did exactly what it should have done.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and I think it tells us a lot of where the mindset for the average Jane and Joe out there is, when they would actually believe that blacks would put up something that aggressive towards whites. I think you're really starting to see a sense of victimhood developing out there among the average white population.
Yeah, they appear to begin more and more pissed off and ready to, we see more and more people willing to use stuff online on Twitter. Things like the mantra, please explain it to me, the war on whites is a good introduction, a recent one. We have more and more listeners to the podcast asking questions, what is bug swarm? And what's this message? What do I say when I'm called a racist? You're just saying it because I'm white. Anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white. They're seeing this stuff work by and large. You know, they're backing down. The other side of the equation tends to back down pretty aggressively. I mean, they're not calling us racist anymore. Are they, Richard?
No, they're not. That's one of the things that I wanted to point out is that in all of the articles that mentioned this billboard, they would explain that it was written by a right-wing segregationist or white-wing separationist, you know, whatever, when they were describing Bob Whitaker, but they would not dare call him a racist and avoided using that term whatsoever, only when necessary, because we have almost effectively killed that word.
We went from being racist, Nazis, and white supremacists. Bob went all the way to conservative and segregationist. That's a pretty interesting. Oh, in a course of maybe 36 months or less. It's pretty good.
Well, it is, because, you know, they shift from racist to white supremacist, you know, which they've been using very, very heavily in the last few months. Well, I mean, right up until pretty much now. Yeah. And all of a sudden, that's not working for them. You know, I think myself on Don's radio show and many other people have been making the point that a person can't be a separatist and a supremacist. You know, obviously, if you want your people to be separate and have their own living space and an opportunity for their children to carry on their heritage, you're not interested in lording over anybody. And, you know, this is a point that has been obvious to anybody who has half a brain, but after a few people make this point over and over again, it's amazing how quickly that even some of these news outlets start to exercise a little intellectual honesty and start calling us by the name nationalists or separatists or whatever. And this white supremacist thing seems to be losing traction.
I always come back with the same thing. Whatever they say, I just state the truth. When they call me a white separatist, I say, you're just saying that because I'm white. And there's all kinds of separatism in the world. I'm like, look at Asia. You got Japan, Korea, China. There's all kinds of separatism there. And you've got all kinds of segregation in the Middle East. You got Israel. You got Turkey. You got Saudi Arabia, which is considered a xenophobic state. But every time you guys see a bunch of white kids at one lunch table, you want to scream white supremacist, white separatist. And they kind of back down after that.
It's all, Tim, it's almost like it's almost like diversity is chasing down the last white person.
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what it's doing. I also would like to state that what we're doing as Bugs activists is not only helping us, but is helping other pro-whites indirectly, even if they don't recognize it. You know, Bill O'Reilly had David Duke on, and, you know, Bill O'Reilly actually showed David Duke a lot more respect this last time than he had the last few times David Duke has been interviewed.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's in direct response to our hammering of these memes.
Oh, there's no doubt. Well, once this stuff comes out, once you have a consistent message that's workable, it doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be workable for a lot of people, whether it be a 5-year-old or a 50-year-old, you know?
Well, that's
once
the main
that
problem.
Comes out, it generally starts breaking open everything. What I tell people, what you just said, I said, go watch David Duke on CNN 5, 6, 7, 10 years ago. Go watch him on CNN the last month. Go watch him on Fox News 5, 6, 7 years ago, and go watch him last month. You're going to see a big difference.
Absolutely. And then one of the things we need to quit asking ourselves is this right or is this wrong or is this factual or non-factual, because it's easy to get hung up in that. We need to start asking ourselves, is this effective or is this ineffective? And that should be the only litmus test that we go by.
Yeah, they want to, well, it's just the typical mindset. The average pro-white is college educated, and their discourse is at a college education. And the last thing we like to do is sit around and repeat ourselves with eighth grade memes, but that's pretty much how this system is controlled, unfortunately. You know, everyone's heard Israel's the greatest democracy in the Middle East. That's an 8th grade meme. Israel's our only ally in the Middle East. They shove that down everyone's throat night and day, and they're not doing it for their health. Well, actually, they are. They're doing it because that's how things work, you know, on the average episode of Fox News.
Right.
So what's going on in your neck of the woods, Truck Roy? When some new? I know there was a big sign, a big Love Your Race sign that went up down there. It caused quite a scandal because the Klan was behind it, or they thought the Klan was behind it, or something along those lines. When are some more? Is there any word on what's going on out there? That's what we're interested in, because I know there's all kinds of stuff in the works. There's always a dozen things I hear of in the works, but I'm just interested in what you guys think is going to hit next. Any predictions?
Well, I have a prediction. There's actually a sign that's going to be going up. It might have gone up today or tomorrow, and it's not a mantra sign, but it's another one. And it's not a Klan sign, but it's going to be another one that goes up that is somewhat in the racial realm of things around my area here. And it's almost like the floodgates have opened. You know, the people believed just a year ago that you couldn't get these billboards up. They just couldn't be done. And the fact that they do go up and sometimes even stay up has given other groups the idea that they can get them up, and it's you know, these billboards change the entire conversation in your area. I deal with these average people every day that come into my shop and do business, and they go from being, you know, fence sitters to being pro-white. They go from being horrified at racial stuff to being ambivalent on it. It really changes the tone and opens up taboo subjects for conversation. And I agree with you and Richard that this has, you know, changed the dynamic there with Bill O'Reilly, or the CNN interview with David Duke. The fact that Scalise was not hammered, was not thrown out, the fact that the other neocons rallied around him, you know, they're just addressing a political reality that's emerging, that they're going to have to at least pay some lip service to the white population and their concerns. And the white population is being emboldened by these messages.
I would also like to point out that along those same lines, we had a representative here in Alabama, Mo Brooks, use the term war on whites, and then what's more important, did not back down when he used that term. We've had a representative from West Virginia, a man named Jim Webb, come out and make the statement that the Republican Party has abandoned the white working class and kind of made a little, you know, and he's a Democrat, but he's correct. Both parties have abandoned the white working class, and yet he has not backed down on that at all either. And I think that's the most important thing, is the sticking by it.
It's an interesting little observation there. Yes. And you guys can listen to the War on Whites. It's a couple up from this Follow the White Rabbit, this sign of the Times Roundtable. It's right on up there. It's the first Red Ice interview with Radio 314. And most of you would say, well, do you think there's a connection between the War on Whites? Well, the enemy did, because anytime you have a major channel. And I didn't name it that. Lana Lochteff named that interview the War on Whites that we did with Red Ice, which has got a lot of attention on YouTube. But there's no way to know if Mo Brooks listened to it or if one of his staffers listened to it. But the enemy took it seriously, and they started hammering Red Ice off of Apple iTunes and everything else after Mo Brooks said that. So there was a connection between the two. You can look it up on Google, Tim Murdoch, War on Whites. So the enemy's going to assume that with a consistent message, if someone's using it or something close, and you have a correlation there within the last year, well, they're going to assume that's where they got it from. And they're going to start going crazy. No different than if Mo Brooks said anti-racism is a code word for anti-white. They'd go crazy over that, too.
Right.
Horace, it astounds me how sensitive media elite are to the activism that we do. This is kind of a side topic, but I did a Five for Friday 2 weeks ago on Don Black's show. And there was an article that came up on Salon.com that was obviously a rebuttal to it. It was, you know, five reasons against basically what I said. And there's no doubt in my mind that the writer of that piece had listened to our show. And the establishment at the control points is very sensitive to how fragile their position is. And they're definitely shaken right now.
Yeah, they're only hanging on by a thread. And control of message, or threatening control of the message, will pretty much get you a lot of attention, a lot of fast, or a lot of it shakes things loose. It starts shaking things loose. It certainly doesn't hurt. I mean, if you're going to have large media power, large online power, well, you might as well use it to project a message out in the audience, which is what the enemy does. Everyone thinks the enemy wins because they control the media. No, they use media control to control the message. That's just a tool. What's interesting also, and a little bit of news down that particular line, Pajama Media or PJ Media did an Oscar report. Now, there's a hashtag going around that about the Oscars being too white and stuff like that. There's a lot of scandal over that, supposedly, that the Oscars are too white. I mean, there's some Mexican servers there and stuff like that, I guess. But the PJ Media put out a piece by, it's called Oscar Report, Al Sharpton Calls Me a Racist. Now, listen to this. During the now over honeymoon that has failed since 1965, and he's talking about black and white issues, and this particular author was accused of being called a racist. And so I'm going to read this again. During the now over honeymoon that has failed since 1965, talking about civil rights, race relations, I have learned one thing. Diversity is always used as an anti-white racial insult. It's kind of an interesting choice of statements.
Somebody's been reading bugs.
Yeah, exactly. Now, this is coming from pjmedia.com, and this is coming from Roger L. Simon. So I think it's an interesting statement coming from him. I believe he's Jewish, but I caught my attention because I get all these news alerts over anti-white, and I just got, well, that's an interesting choice of phraseology there. But I thought that was interesting.
Well, you talk about they're hanging on by a thread, and that's an interesting analogy. As you continue it on, it's a thread that's a web, and you know, spiders weave webs, and a spider will sit at the corner or sit at the center, and anything that touches that web, he or she is attuned to the vibrations. And these people like Mr. Simon, he might be picking up these vibrations and trying to go with where it's going, you know, find out what's happening.
Smart. So.
Or he just heard the term. You know, once terminology gets out there, people don't even know where they heard it, but they're going to use it because it fits a niche. You know, it's a term they need. They need that, you know, there's a use for that word, anti-white.
Yeah. I get reports every once in a while, once a blue moon, where someone's at a grocery store and someone out of the blue uses something mantra like, you know, that they've heard. Grocery store attendant, you know, you're going through the line at the grocery store and they're talking to a customer, they've been around a long time, someone says, you know, diversity is a code word for white genocide, and they start laughing or something like that, you know. I get reports from that time to time, but this stuff is out there. It's out there.
Now, I got a question for you, Richard, down there with that billboard that went up that said diversity means chasing down the last white person. When it came down, it was obviously under pressure. The billboard owner was under pressure because, you know, I assume he signed a contract. He wanted to, you know, do some business, but he must have come under some pressure. Have you seen in any of the blogs or the reports on it or the comments on the news articles anybody referencing the intimidation of free speech in the wake of the shootings over in France? Because, you know, that was, you know, France was saying, we're going to stand up for free speech, you know, and we have the right to blasphemy and this and that. And yet over here in America, it seems like something that's really mild, you know, diversity means chasing down the last white person, is verboten. You can't have free speech on that there. Have you seen any comments along those lines?
In the comment sections, yes, I have. Not so much in the actual blog itself. I follow AL.com, which is the major the Birmingham News website here, you know, in central Alabama. And a lot of the commenters were talking about that free speech. And, of course, the anti-whites, they're you know, their main fallback is, well, the First Amendment doesn't refer to this. The First Amendment only refers to if the government's cracking down on you, which I believe a case could be made for that because the mayor himself stated that he was searching for legal means to get this removed. So, you know, they may have hung themselves on that. But, yes, among the commenters in these comments, and some of these articles have like 4,000 comments. And, yes, and this is a little bit...
Everyone in the county commenting.
Right. And yet, you know, and the argument it is, does somebody have the right to say what they want? Does somebody have the right to do business as they want?
They always say, well, you can't scream fire in a crowded theater. And I say, what if there is a fire?
Exactly.
Isn't it imperative?
Right. What if you're telling the truth? That's exactly right.
France doesn't have any free speech, by the way. They only allow limited free speech against Muslims. We have free speech, but as soon as you put up a sign with the hashtag white genocide, and they didn't even do the hashtag. The company obviously didn't understand something about it, something about Twitter, because they didn't do the hashtag correctly. And I would assume the activists got the hashtag correctly, because they had it on there. So they didn't even transcribe that right, but as soon as that goes up, you know, you're supposed to have free speech, but no sooner than that goes up, they threaten to murder the people.
That's right. That's right.
The social justice warriors are about as tolerant as the Taliban.
Well, and that was another interesting part that I noticed, that the first billboard went up, mid last year, and it said anti-racist is a code word for anti-white, and it was in another section of town. All the local media outlets were decidedly against it. This one went up, and the local media outlets were much more balanced and actually played on air one or maybe two of the threatening voicemails that the sign company had gotten.
Wow, that's huge. That's huge. Because, you know, I know I've been in contact with some of the people that have put up billboards in my area. And, of course, the sign company – the sign company people get blindsided by this because they have no idea that the peace and love crowd can leave, you know, vulgar threatening messages, sexual stuff, threatening to burn down your business. And, you know, they're blindsided. A lot of times they're intimidated right off. But, you know, over time, of course, they're going and they're talking at their churches. They're talking to their neighbors. They're talking to the media. If the media will hear them and saying this, The anti-racist side, which is actually anti-white, are these people are, you know, completely opposed to free speech. They're threatening, they're obnoxious, they're vulgar. And this is a revelation for most people who have only been exposed to racial issues from the Hollywood perspective, where, you know, the anti-white side is these people that are just love and peace and flowers and peacefully protesting. When they see this sort of vitriol come out, it impacts them, but it also spreads to everybody they know.
Yeah, it's kind of a revelation that at the end of the rainbow, all these love and hugs people, actually, when push comes to shove and comes down to free speech, well, they're threatening to kill your pets. They'll threaten to firebomb your house, to kill your mother. They're nuts.
Well, and you know, the frustrating thing for these sign guys is the first thing they do is go to the cops. And because they think, you know, if you get a threatening message on your phone, the FBI will investigate it. Well,
oh, it would. And let me tell you, if you're one of these peace, love, and understanding guys, put up a sign saying, you know, fight the hate with some, you know, blonde girl with the hate symbol on or something like that, like they did in Minnesota, up there in Minnesota with these huge anti-white signs about diversity and fighting racism and fighting white privilege. If someone pro-white were to ever dare and don't ever do it to find out, call in some type of a bomb threat, even a phony bomb threat like they got at they used to get at the Ameren and the Stormfront conferences, you'd be in jail. FBI would investigate. You'd be in jail overnight.
Hey, I would like to ask you about those billboards in Minnesota. That kind of dropped off my radar. But did those billboards get pulled down? Because there was a little bit of a backlash amongst the people that live in that area. That, you know, I saw a few news reports where people were like, "What is this saying? Only white people can be racist?" You know, and making simple points. Of course, they're not Mantra-esque, but. Still, did those billboards come down, or are they still up?
It's the anti-racist ad campaign in Minnesota. The last ones that I know of were, well, yeah, they stayed up for quite a while. They weren't successful in taking them down, but the campaign that you're talking about, I believe, is the Unfair campaign, Unfair campaign. I don't know exactly what the whole story was behind it, but, yeah, they pissed off a lot of white people. Yeah. They pissed off a lot of white people, but I mean, you know, the type of person that's pissed isn't calling in threats or bomb threats. They're just talking about it's just anti-white. That's what was coming out. White Genocide Project did a whole thing on those. I don't know how long they stayed up for. They were only up for like some type of conference at a university or something like that. Or there was one series of signs that were only up for some type of conference in anticipation of some type of conference. And the conference itself, I want to say, may have been canceled or something.
Well, that that kind of leads back to...
I don't remember all that. There's so much diversity nonsense in conferences about diversity. It's a total scam. It's a total anti-white scam. There's so much of it that the Minnesota ones may have been, in hindsight, the tip of the iceberg where people started to be pissed off.
Well, you know, I don't like to use the term pro-white to describe myself. I mean, I am pro-white, but that's only because I'm white and normal. And most white and normal people are nonviolent, and that's why we have white flight. We will sell our house and move two exits down just to get away from this. And that goes back to the point that diversity means chasing down the last white person, because if we move two exits down, they're going to come down two exits and say you're lacking diversity. And so,
yeah, I mean,
in Minnesota, the people weren't, you know, the white normal crowd, they were upset and they were indignant, but they wasn't to the point to where they would actually call in a bomb threat or let alone follow through with it. They were just upset and indignant, you know.
Yeah, there's, for those that have asked the question, there are two sides of the white genocide equation. There is the simple side, and it's simply this. Anytime you start talking force assimilation, like Marion County, California was targeted for forced integration, forced assimilation because they were too white. We have housing and urban development targeting areas right now for forced assimilation just because they're too white. In Tibet, in various different indigenous communities around the world, if you target someone for forced assimilation, Tibet would be a great example. You get hit with genocide very quickly. Forced assimilation is always considered genocide, unless it's white kids. White kids, you know, progressive policy or diversity. In white countries, we call it diversity and multiculturalism. Everywhere else, they call it genocide. At the UN, we're simply pointing out the contradiction.
Well, there was an Aboriginal activist in Australia, Mick Dodson, I think his name was, that made this exact same point. You know, genocide does not have to be with bullets. You know, you can do it through social engineering. And that's exactly what happened.
I was impressed by the Inquisitor piece, Inquistr, I think it was, that quoted Lemkin.
Right, and that was written by a black woman.
Yeah.
So she laid out she quoted Lemkin and laid and said that where you could find the definition, you know, with the UN resolution on the Convention of Genocide or Convention on the Resolution of Genocide, whatever it's called.
Yeah, because when Bob talked forced assimilation, you know, there's another angle to it, and that's a little more conspiracy angle. We always say white genocide is the worst run conspiracy ever. First you have all this immigration into white countries and only white countries without a vote. If you do vote on it, they throw the vote out the window, like Arizona or California in the mid-90s.
Or then Alabama in the 2000s.
There you go. Then you have forced integration, forced assimilation. All the anti-white media, everything's multiracial, interracial, 24 hours, 7 days a week. And then, of course, they tell you about your inevitable brown future. It's probably the worst-run conspiracy ever. But many believe that the programs were intentionally designed to do just that, and there's, you know, the proof is in the pudding. What would be the point of all this? How are you going to get to this inevitable brown future? And they're not talking about doing this in China. They haven't been doing this in Saudi Arabia, and they're never going to. They're not doing it in Japan or Mars or the moon. They're doing it in white countries, only white countries, all white countries. But I think that the black woman that wrote the Inquisitor piece knows very well that forced assimilation is always called genocide, except when it comes to white people and our own anti-white elites. We're simply pointing out the double standard.
Absolutely right. And they change words a lot, you know, like the word indigenous. You know, the way they use the word indigenous, they actually use it like white people do not deserve to be on this planet.
Well, I did a whole thing on that. If you like the classic Horace the Avenger, the fast talking, the first three podcasts, if you're the type of rabbit that loves that type of stuff, I did my Red Ice debut with Henrik, and I covered this topic. But the only people considered indigenous to Europe under their definitions are the Sami, and they're always playing with this word indigenous. And they've openly said on two different occasions at a decent level that none of these laws apply to you because you're not indigenous. Of course, we haven't been able to pin them down on that, if they're just playing with the word indigenous or if they want to go on the record and say we're aliens from another planet and we don't have any protection under the law, because as soon as the average white finds out either way, they're going to start a revolt. There's no use in cooperating with someone that doesn't give you any protection under law or has, and they're not.
Well, that is very interesting because they do use those laws and use that term against people like, say, the Norwegians, when not one square foot of Norway was not reclaimed from the ocean. So, in other, you know, the old saying is God made the world, but the Dutch created Norway. You know, and the Dutch created the Netherlands. Saying Norway.
But, Amsterdam on
right,
the waters.
The entire country has been reclaimed from the ocean, built by the Dutch, but yet it doesn't belong to the Dutch. It belongs to foreigners.
The only people indigenous to Europe are considered the Sami under the law. And Sami, to me, look white, but they're playing with these definitions. In fact, if you watch How Whites Took Over America Part 2, people don't understand. Those that don't understand should know that these are actual legitimate arguments. They're constantly playing with human rights. I mean, the reason the Alabama vote was thrown out was the same reason it was thrown out in California in, what, 94, 95? The same reason it was thrown out in Arizona, what was it, 2013? Mm-hmm. Those votes were thrown out because human rights can't be subject to a vote. And you can't limit immigration because that would violate the Mexicans' human rights. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. You can't limit immigration. You can't close borders because that would violate their human rights. And you can't vote on immigration because human rights can't be subject to a vote. Now, how can you win that one? So basically, we're sitting here, and under their rules, we are non-entities. And all we're doing is pointing it out over and over again.
Well, that's one of those things you have to actually pound into people's heads.
And there's many conservatives at the top, or so-called conservatives, that know it. Ann Coulter came as close as anyone talking about California. If this was any other group but whites, it would be labeled genocide. That's the point.
Yep.
That's the point.
You know what I love about this is you don't have to make the full point. If you can just get the billboard up, it starts a conversation that we can't help but win.
Right. Well, the enemy sat around 100 years and is always arguing a position that always puts us in a world without any white people. Sooner or later, whites are going to realize it, and they're just going to say, screw you.
But you can't watch town after town or suburb after suburb, you know, being invaded, you know, and that's the true word, without realizing, hey, something's wrong. You know, I don't live in the same area my grandparents live in, you know. I had to move because of these policies and because of this. You know,
surprise me if one black nationalist activist, maybe a woman black nationalist activist, starts realizing what we're saying and starts looking at it and starts raising hell. Because believe it or not, Africans have been by and large annihilated by white genocide. They have been. Half of them are in jail. These crazy social engineering experiments that they had no power over, force busing and everything else, was all a byproduct. It's all a symptom of a larger disease, and they've been annihilated by it. Sure, some of them have some good jobs. They can play in the NBA, maybe drink out of a water fountain they couldn't before, but by and large, they're destroyed. They're a destroyed group as a byproduct. And I'm surprised, sooner or later, one of them's going to figure it out, and they're especially going to start bitching about, you know, once you're a quote-unquote minority living with white people, you got it pretty good until a bunch of others flood in. And then it's not so fun anymore because they're fighting their way to the top as well.
On that note, Coretta Scott King actually come out, who is the wife of the late Dr. Martin Luther King, came out and stated that massive immigration, and especially illegal immigration, has destroyed jobs for black people.
That's common sense.
Yeah. Absolutely common sense, and we've been pointing it out for years, but, you know, we didn't gain any traction until a group of us started pounding memes.
Yeah, sure.
Well, I think, too, that the blacks are starting to catch on to the fact that they're over.
Yeah.
And this is something you've pointed out, Horace, you know, when you go back to Nagin, Mayor Nagin down in New Orleans that got prosecuted, or Kwame Kilpatrick in Detroit. You know,
that's unprecedented.
No, and it's not a black and white country anymore. I mean, they're outnumbered by Mexicans and Asians. And the thing that struck me was a couple of weeks ago, I picked up my paper, and it was the funeral for one of the two police officers that were killed in New York City by the black fellow. And one was Hispanic, the other was Asian. This was the funeral for the Asian one. And the look of disgust on the Asian woman's face, the widow of the police officer, stuck in my mind. And I've lived around some Asian populations. I've lived around some Mexican populations. And if blacks, like petty black criminals, ever thought that white cops were rough on them, God have mercy if they have an Asian or a Mexican cop on them. I mean, even Mexicans are afraid of Mexican cops. And as America becomes non-white, the blacks are basically up a creek without a paddle.
Boy, you ain't lying on that. I've witnessed it here in Birmingham. You know, the black hair industry, you know, they love their weaves, but it's completely dominated by Vietnamese individuals. And you will always hear these black people complaining about the fact that these Vietnamese people are gouging them on hair. You know, and I've been in restaurants before where I've seen them walk right past a black customer, you know, asking miss, looking for another refill or whatever, and go to a white customer or go to a Mexican customer and handle them first, evidently because of the stereotype that blacks don't tip. So, you know,
well, it's not just a stereotype.
But it's starting to come home, though. They're starting to realize this. Hey, we're no longer the darling minority.
Right. They're not needed anymore. And I think what this really understates is that the fact that we've had four, five, six generations now of anti-white propaganda, and it's been sold because they were trying to help black people. They were never trying to help black people. It was always exclusively an anti-white program, and now even the blacks are realizing it.
They've been used, and it's over with. I think it's funny. One of the things I get a kick out is on Twitter, you can see this because Twitter is pretty much the lifeline of the planet these days for various different, as far as social media goes, as far as memes, and because everything's limited to 140 characters or less or a picture or this or that. But I think what's funny is all the different tweets that I see are, I'm not anti-white, but I'm not anti-white. People try and say they're not anti-white, which I think is great.
Yes. Well, they, you know, they backed us into that corner for 40 years, and you never could. You could not win a racial argument by saying, I've got so-and-so many black friends, or I'm not a racist, but, you know, that just puts you on the defensive. Well, it's wonderful to see them on the defensive, finally.
Yeah, everyone's on the defensive saying they're not anti-white. It's about time. Yeah, as soon as you say, I'm not a racist, but... Yeah, you might as well get on the next march in Selma or whatever else is going on for the civil rights. Because that's what happens to these Republicans when they say that, especially the Republicans. Democrats don't go down that road, typically, white Democrats. Even if they were former Klansmen, they don't go down that road. They know better. But there's these stupid Republicans walk into that, and next thing you know, they got to do these civil rights tours. And it's hilarious. But anymore, I'm not anti-white, but, you know.
But everything you say ends up with a future with no white children.
Yeah, exactly.
So tell me again.
I'm not anti-white, but you know, I'm only opposed to whites sitting at a lunch table by themselves. You know.
Now, do either of you guys know if we have listeners out there that like seeing these billboards go up? Is there a safe or official or anonymous way that people can contribute to make more of these billboards go up?
Well, Fight White Genocide has one going on that's going to go in the north, but I don't know that they have it nailed down. Here's the thing. Anyone can get together and put up a press line or put up Bob Whitaker's press because he did write it. A lot of times a sign company is interested in who wrote it and the background of the person that wrote it. That's what we've always found out. I've seen small independent sign companies. It seems to be the ones that they end up getting something done with. However, they don't have PR teams. If someone could get one with a large sign company with a big PR team, it would probably go over quite well for a long time. But I've never seen one get one going at the CBS's or Lamar. They usually back out of it the last minute. They might entertain it. But usually something falls through, something goes sideways. So it just depends. It's almost a full-time job researching and getting it done, but there's going to be more and more publicity stunts that are going to get more and more outrageous.
Well, Lamar will fold as well. They folded on the League of the South billboard, and all it said was secede, you know, and
exactly controversial in the South.
But I'll tell you, the boys over at Southern Nationalist Network had a donate button for the first Birmingham Monster billboard, and I believe that they could be, I believe they're trusted. I donated through that link, and it got to where it was going. And of course, like you said, you mentioned the Fight White Genocide group. I don't know what the holdup is on the billboard in the North. They've been talking about it for a year, and somehow
just raising the money. Just raising the money. The site's not big enough to get the traffic to raise the money. Well, I you see people that get involved in this type of thing with an anonymous model, they get a kick out of it. And so a lot of times people don't want to do it. They want to do it themselves is what I've seen. They want to get the billboard, find the billboard, get it up themselves, work out the deal, put up Bob's press line or whatever, and or White Rabbit Radio's press line. Whatever they want to do is fine. We want to stimulate anonymous models as well. But having a central location where people can donate to, I don't even know that that's really workable for this type of thing. We saw a little bit with the League of the South billboards. They have money. They raise money for those. But at the same time, this type of thing with these type of messages attract in someone that wants to do it all themselves, basically. Get a group together and do it. That's kind of how they want that. They just kind
okay,
of want
well, the, well, let's say there's somebody like that listening, somebody who wants to do it all themselves. What if they want to use, say, Bob's press line? I mean, how do they get Bob's press line?
How do they get Bob's press line? Here, let me pull it up. It's pretty easy. I don't know. What's Bob's press line, Richard?
It's 803-553-6146.
Yeah. Now, I wouldn't start calling that night and day, but that is Bob Whitaker's actual press line. The press can call. If it's not press, he's going to obviously move on along. But Bob does have a press line. White Rabbit Radio has a press line, too. Anyone can contact us and get that. Bob Whitaker's press line is far and wide. It's been given out far and wide.
And that's another thing about this billboard in Birmingham. I've been a reader of Bugs for, several years now. And, one of the things he always complained about was that nobody wanted to talk to him. But if I'm not mistaken, he got at least one interview out of this last billboard. And so,
I heard him on the news. I heard him on
right.
the news.
So, I mean, that kind of killed, kind of got it out there. And,
yeah. Well, the I remember with the White Man March and Kyle Hunt, the reaction to white genocide was so vitriolic. There was so much vitriol. Thank God he wasn't in a stationary location. The death threats and everything else. I assume that when the first billboard went up or something like that with white genocide on it, it would kind of get out of hand. And, most of the objectives of you could have for a publicity stunt were achieved in this thing in the first 72 hours. So what was interesting is activists got all their money back. So basically they're sitting out there with a pile full of cash waiting for the next opportunity, already looking for the next opportunity, I'm sure, with
so
all
wait,
their
wait.
Money.
Of course, you're telling me they got all this press and didn't have to pay anything at all?
No. They didn't pay anything at all. They gave them the money back. And they just wanted it over with.
Well, shoot, man. I mean, you look. If we have a listener out there that has the free time or the initiative to go out and just talk to some small sign company owner and get him to put up, diversity means chasing down the last white person. Who cares if he sticks with it? I mean, if you get all your money back when they back out of a contract, I mean, that is a huge publicity stunt.
That's what
at
I
no
said.
Cost.
I'd be happy if they used their wad of cash 5 dozen times to get up billboards all over the place and get their money back each time. I mean, any objective you could have as far as the media storm, as far as the hashtag white genocide, as far as getting Bob Whitaker's press line was attached, getting the media to call him and quote him on the record. Any objectives you could have for 1 month were achieved in the first week. So, I thought it was ungodly successful.
Publicity when it goes up, publicity when it comes down. That pro-white message keeps going round and round.
There you go. There you go. I mean, there were blogs debating, like Hurtis debating whether or not it was Photoshopped or real, and then they found out it was real when the news reports started coming. They couldn't believe it. So it's kind of, that article from Hurtis on The Awakening. It's true. There's an awakening going on.
I'll tell you what, I think the fact that Red Ice Creations is now solidly pro-white and on message, and the fact that Hartiste, which is a number one game website, and I'm talking about the game as in pulling women game,
It kind of surprised me. He would write about our stuff.
Hey, that's a group of individuals. You know, that's a target audience that, you know, I didn't think we could reach. You just like you reached a target audience that nobody thought we could reach, and we put them and their own message. So,
yeah, right. we want it far and wide. But I think also there comes a tendency is when something's successful and it starts spiraling. There are a lot of different media savvy people that like, okay, how can I align with that? How can I help them? Because I don't want to be going against that 3 years from now or a year from now, because this could go big time. So this is pretty cool stuff. You know, people always want to be associated with something, with winning, something cool, something different, or something radical. Because a lot of people, a lot of these kids, the 8chan, the 4chan, well, now they're 8chan, formerly 4chan, that have been attracted into getting on message through radical podcasts, kind of like Horse the Avengers Follow the White Rabbit or various different things like that. They like fast moving targets, and they want to be on the right side and the most radical side out there. You know. And
that's the marketplace of ideas is so small anyway, but when you get into racial topics, I mean, there's really only one voice out there from the establishment, and I like what Richard said. Red Ice going pro white was something that just blew me away.
Well, Rinse.com went pro white, basically. Not quite the same. Well, they did. I mean, you're on Rinse Radio. So when they went anti-Zionist. When they went down that road, all hell broke loose between Jeff Rentz and InfoWars Alex Jones. That's when all the stuff came out. And now, of course, Rentz.com is considered famous anti-Semite and this and that. But you're on there every morning. Don Black's on there. Dr. David Duke's on there. And so Red Ice would just be eventually, there's going to be two camps. Those that will talk about anything white, talk about multiculturalism, talk about white genocide, and those that only want to ignore it or want to get around it or want to talk about something else, you know. So what Red Ice is doing is basically holding to their original foundation, the same thing with Rinse.com, that they'll talk about anything. If it's a conspiracy, they want to talk about it, and white genocide is the worst-run conspiracy ever. I mean,
I took a listen to the podcast that you did, the interview with Henrik over there just recently. And he's a very well-spoken fellow, and I've never listened to his podcast before, but I think I might take a listen to another one. And to have that asset on our side is a big, big coup for us, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's like turning CNN pro-white or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, well, yeah, because, look, who listens to CNN or who watches CNN? It's old people. You know, who's listening to Red Ice? I have a feeling their demographic's much, much younger.
Yeah, well, let me give you guys an example. Stormfront used to have on a front page ad. They might still some days. And we got a lot of traffic from Stormfront putting up a little, it wasn't technically an ad, it was a little blimp thing for White Rabbit Radio. And Red Ice, we get traffic from the interviews there, but White Rabbit Radio we have a direct link on the right-hand side, and we get probably four times the amount of traffic. And so that gives you an idea of how big these sites are. These are big, deep sites. And my podcast is very specialized. I gave Henrik classic Horus. straight out of the woodwork. Just everything all at once. Because we want the audience that likes that type of stuff. And, so far the feedback's been good. Those that like it, love it. Those that don't. But same old, you know. We want to attract as many people on message as fast as possible. By any means necessary, legally.
Right.
Action begets action, and you know.
Well, yeah, I think that's the case with the billboards. I think you know.
Well, there's people. Their wheels are starting to turn in their heads. Yeah. Like, how can I creatively? Could I put this on a Goodyear blimp? There's a great idea.
Well, not only that, like when that first billboard went up in Roy's area, you know, there was a couple of people sitting around saying, "Well, I didn't know that could happen." You know, hey, let me see if I can get one up in my area. Yeah. And then we had, next thing you know, you had one in Birmingham. And then the next thing you know, some other pro-white group that was not even involved with it, well, the League of the South, they said, well, hey, if they're getting billboards up, surely our moderate message can go up. And they're putting billboards up. And then, you know, then the quote-unquote Klan gets in the game, you know. 6 years ago, you could have asked any of these people, how about you rent a billboard? Oh, nobody will rent us no billboard. We can't get no billboard, you know?
Yeah.
But that's not the case now. Now they get on the phone and actually ask, you know?
So. Eventually, what happens with this type of thing is you just start watching them break down. Eventually, the interviews get more and more cordial. The interviews get more respectful, what we're seeing now. Eventually, you just start saturating the public with it. And one morning, they'll all wake up and, you know, everything will be just like it was. Everything just becomes saturated and racist and anti-white all the time, and automatically things will start reversing. So the little signs you got to look for.
Absolutely right.
Any last words, Truck Roy? Richard Cipher?
I think as we got little signs coming in here in the media, like David Duke getting softball interviews, and we got big signs going up alongside freeways. So it's a sign of the times. Watch it.
Yeah, the idea that Bill O'Reilly didn't start yelling anti-Semite Nazi 1,000 times at Dr. Duke was hilarious, because that's typically what he does. And that to a pro-white is a softball interview. The interview wasn't exactly softball, but comparatively, it was. It was kind of unexpected. So.
And David Duke sitting there on his video Skype holding up visual aids. Love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
Who did communism and all this kind of stuff, you know. That was classic.
The only other thing you could have had is like a blinking neon sign behind him saying, it's the Jews, it's the Jews.
Yeah, or a little button where you hit on your TV and you can buy his book automatically. You know, something like that. But yeah, it was classic. CNN, I thought his interview on CNN was outright respectful. I thought it was the best interview he'd ever gotten, as far as someone not yelling and screaming Nazi 1,000 times, you know.
I haven't even seen that one. I'll look it up as soon as I get off here and give it a listen.
Because new listeners might think some of these interviews are tough. If you go back 10 years, you'll see some wild interviews with pro-whites.
Oh, yeah, they used to just cut him off. Oh, we lost satellite feed, blah, 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 you know. Yeah. And then badmouth him once he was gone and wasn't there to defend himself.
Or they just want to talk about Holocaust denial or something else.
Right.
So it's kind of interesting. But we're going to sign off now. This is the sign of the times, the end of the sign roundtable with Richard Cipher and Truck Roy, and we'll have these guys back on, and hopefully you guys enjoyed it. And this is Horace the Avengers, Follow the White Rabbit, exclusive to WhiteRabbitRadio.net. Those of you that like news and views, we do Endgame Exotica. We'll have more Candy Carrots coming out in the next month, and we're doing more and more live interviews. Not live, I should say. Recorded interviews coming up. We have Charles Kraft coming up. We have Henrik from Red Ice coming on. We have all kinds of interesting characters sniffing around that want to come on Endgame Exotica and talk about, well, all kinds of interesting things. And so you guys want to keep the station tuned right here to WhiteRabbitRadio.net. Check out the recent interview. The last interview I did was on Red Ice Creations, and it is the elites and their memes. It is a long podcast. It is fast and furious. It was like 2.5 hours long, edited down, and it's classic Horace Avenger. If that's what you like, that's what you got. And we'll be back with you. We're going to start doing more Follow the White Rabbits as we get a chance, and we'll be back with you in the next episode. WhiteRabbitRadio.net